Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. A dip in Gulf of Alaska Pacific cod stocks means that regulators are cutting the fishery's total allowable catch. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council decided as much at a recent meeting. Also, consumers don't just want to eat Alaskan cod themselves. They want their dogs to get a good meal, too. One company is now catering to pet owners with a new product. That and more coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K through 12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska, creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AK Teach or at 907-942-0667.
A dramatic decline in Gulf of Alaska Pacific cod stocks forced regulators to hack the fishery's total allowable catch by about 80%. The large cut will likely hit the commercial fishing industry in the Gulf hard. The North Pacific Fishery Management Council, which regulates groundfish in the Gulf and Bering Sea, made the move due to a roughly 70% decline in Pacific cod. Cod is Alaska's second largest commercial fishery by volume, bringing in $186 million in 2015. Dr. Stephen Barbeau works with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Fisheries Division. Barbeau told council members the decline is likely due to what scientists and the media refer to as the blob, a body of warm water that moved into the Gulf 3 years ago.
That warm anomaly, went all the way down to 300 meters. So there's no place these cod really could go that they weren't encountering these warmer temperatures.
Warm water boosts the metabolism of cod and other marine life, causing them to eat more. Increased demand on the food supply led to smaller fish, making cod more susceptible to predation and environmental factors. Warm temperatures were also tough on juvenile cod, and stocks are expected to continue declining.
Projected to reach an all-time low in 2020, so we're not at the bottom of the barrel yet. We're still going down. Due to high mortality of the 2011-2012 age classes and expected poor recruitment in 2013-2016, we still expect this stock to continue downward.
But it wasn't all bad news. Barbeau told the council that cooler waters are likely to move into the Gulf this winter, which will likely boost cod stocks if the pattern holds. The council set the total allowable catch for cod in the Gulf at about 13,000 metric tons, down from about 64,000 metric tons in 2017. Councilmember and Homer-based commercial fisherman Buck Lakaitis expressed concern over how the decline in cod will shift fishing effort.
The focus of Gulf of Alaska fisheries is likely to shift towards flatfish fisheries, and particularly a focus on arrowtooth flounder.
The arrowtooth fishery is associated with a high level of halibut bycatch, which may be problematic. Halibut stocks are estimated to be down 20%. The council also reduced the allowable catch for arrowtooth by about 23,000 metric tons to protect halibut stocks. Pacific cod stocks in the Bering Sea and along the Aleutian Islands saw a less significant drop of about 40%. The council reduced the allowable catch for 2018 by about 14% in those areas.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
A ballot initiative aimed at protecting Alaska salmon habitat is kicking up a controversy. Environmental groups say it's a needed step to protect Alaska's most iconic and lucrative fish. But the state, many industry groups, and several Alaska Native corporations are speaking out against it. If Alaskans are confused about what the ballot initiative would actually do, that's understandable. That's because both sides can't seem to agree on how it would affect future development in Alaska. Elizabeth Harbaugh from Alaska's Energy Desk dug into the details.
At a Stand for Salmon event held in Anchorage this fall, supporter Arlo Davis collected his first signature.
Wonder if you'd like to be my first signature on my booklet.
I'd be very happy to.
Right on.
All right, thank you.
As he signed on, Kevin Illingworth said, like a lot of Alaskans, he thinks protecting salmon should be a priority.
I know the importance of salmon to our entire state, not just any one group or individuals, but to all of us.
That was just one of 32,127 signatures Stand for Salmon's organizers need to pin down before mid-January to get it on the ballot. And that's not the only hurdle. The state thinks the initiative is unconstitutional and is challenging it in court. Here are some basics. The initiative assumes all the state's water bodies are habitat for salmon and other similar fish species, unless proven otherwise. If a project will significantly impact salmon habitat, it's put through a much tougher vetting process. And importantly, the initiative gives the state more power to stop projects altogether. Industry groups hate this initiative. This is Deantha Crockett with the Alaska Miners Association speaking about Stand for Salmon at a recent conference.
We don't believe this initiative is standing for salmon at all. We think it's shutting down the state economy, communities, and our way of life.
Other industries and Native corporations banding against the initiative use similar language. They say it will set, quote, near impossible new standards, unquote, for development. Take a big proposed mining project like the Pebble Mine or the Donlin Mine. Those mines are in areas with salmon habitat, which isn't unusual in Alaska.
Probably most large mines are going to somehow impact fish habitat, and that's unavoidable.
Richard Milius is former director of the Alaska Department of Natural Resources Division of Mining, Land, and Water, and he's against the initiative. In some cases, Milius says, a mine's impact is permanent. According to legal documents filed by the state, the Donlin Mine will eliminate two fish streams forever.
When you're creating a permanent facility that's always going to be there, you can't mitigate that specific stream or restore that specific stream because it's not there anymore.
But Milia says companies can't just walk away and do nothing about it. Today, the state makes them compensate by restoring salmon habitat somewhere else, sometimes in a different water body. The Stand for Salmon initiative would tighten the rules. All restoration, mitigation, or preservation has to be in the same water body that's damaged. If that's not possible, then the project can't go forward. Opponents say that's one reason why Stand for Salmon is designed to block big projects like Donlin, but also smaller ones like airstrips and roads. Stand for Salmon's backers say this is an overreaction. Emily Anderson of the Wild Salmon Center helped write the initiative.
If you actually do take a hard look at this and keep an open mind, you'll see that this shift is not going to be dramatic. It's not going to dramatically impact the way you can and do business.
Anderson argues that in many cases, project builders can avoid permanently damaging salmon streams by putting a mine in a slightly different spot or by using different technology. But Anderson also acknowledges that under the initiative, some projects won't make the cut.
There's a standard in here, a standard of care that says if you're going to substantially damage the Alaska's fisheries, Fish and Game can say no to your permit.
Anderson says this is a paradigm shift for Alaska, but she says it's an important one.
There has to be some sort of upper limit or upper threshold and the ability built into the system for the state to say, you know, this isn't going to work with us.
But there's another significant wrinkle to this controversy, a legal wrinkle. Stand for Salmon's lawyers and the state's lawyers fundamentally disagree on whether the initiative goes against the state's constitution. The question is, does it mean that one state resource, salmon, would take priority over minerals, oil, hydropower, and all Alaska's other resources? The Alaska Supreme Court will have the final word on that this spring. If the initiative wins in court and gets enough signatures, next year it will be on the ballot. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
One company is innovating with fish as an ingredient, but not only in human food. Alaskan Leader, a self-described hook and line fishing company, just took away a couple of wins at the Alaska Symphony of Seafoods, a competition that recognizes Alaska seafood products. It got first place in the Beyond the Plate category for its cod crunchies pet treats. KMXD spoke with Keith Singleton, the president of the value-added division of Alaskan Leader, about developing a product for pets. Is animal treats something you guys have pursued before? Is this new for your organization?
It is brand new for Alaskan Leader this year. It's a dehydrated minced product where we take the trim from our fillets and portion programs for our restaurant chains, supermarket chains, club stores. We take that mince, which is a little just right off the line, so it's human grade. You could put it in clam chowder. It's that delicious. And we run it through a mincer, and then we make it into blocks, and we run it into a former that cuts it into the pieces that we want. Then we run it through a dehydrator, and it comes out with these delicious little dog treats, and the dogs just go absolutely wild over them.
And I imagine that at some point, someone is taste testing the dog treats.
Yeah, we're actually, because it's a dehydrated one ingredient, it's just cod, we do it ourselves. I mean, it's really, at the end of the day, I'm not saying you can go out and go eat it because it does have a lot of protein in it, but it's totally palatable for human consumption. I just don't do that. That's not what we, it's not what we're aiming. That's not the market we're aiming for. People, I tried it on all my friends 2 years ago when we started making it, and they're like, wow, this is cool. I said, thanks. And the next year, we rolled it out of the pet treat, and they said, dude, tell me you weren't feeding his dog food.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, really, if it's funny. Just straight up cod, there's not a lot of difference. I mean, you see a lot of dog treats in stores, and it's just like dried pig ear. It's like, if I wanted to eat that, I very well could, but I'm probably not going to.
No, probably not. And the thing is, we don't have any other ingredients in it. We're not putting any other pastes or byproducts or flavors or collagens in there, nothing. It's just dried codfish and cute little wafers, and really, you know, the response from the canines is what's really launched us. We've got video. The dogs are crazy for this stuff, so it's really been good for us.
Do you think you'll apply the same approach to, like, other bits and ends of fish, like salmon or something like that?
What we really pride ourselves in is using the whole fish eventually. Right now, I think we're breaking at 90% of the codfish being used for something. The livers go to our liver customer that makes cod liver oil. The heads go to a pet food company that takes about as much as we can possibly process, which is very good for us at the bottom line. And then the skins are going to a collagen and a dry process for another product that's being made. And so it really just gets down to the frame. I mean, the rack and the viscera. And the rack, we're doing a lot of research on that right now. And we think there's a lot of protein in that also could be utilized. So we have a great steering committee that works on byproducts and what we can make from it. And we're going to continue to do that. It really helps with the overall year end.
Yeah, and I have heard that you guys have a wide-ranging presence at Costco.
Yeah, we're in, I think, four divisions of Costco right now. And we're in a lot of supermarket stores. In Texas, in Louisiana, back in the East Coast, California, Washington, Oregon. Yeah, we're spreading our wings. There's no doubt. As the flavors come on and we continue to diversify, we're going to continue to add more market footprint.
That was KMXT talking with Keith Singleton, the president of the value-added division of Alaskan Leader. The company just won the first place prize in the Beyond the Plate category at the Alaska Symphony of Seafoods for its Cod Crunchies Pet Treats.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KBBI's Aaron Bolton in Homer and the Alaska Interview Desk's Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.